Hey, this is John Chris from Saturday Down South. Welcome to the SDS Podcast. Our guest for this episode is Phil Savage. Not only is he the color man in the booth for Alabama's radio broadcast, but he and Nick Saban go all the way back to the early 90s when they were both on the coaching staff of the Cleveland Browns. Phil's new book, Fourth and Goal Every Day, is a must-read for any fan of the Crimson Tide. We also went in-depth on both sides of the ball in Tuscaloosa. Is this simply another case of reloading, or are they rebuilding? Take a listen and find out for yourself. Okay, Phil, so the book is Fourth and Goal Every Day, Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. You have a preface from Nick Saban himself and a foreword from Reese Davis. I'll bet there's a lot of SEC fans that don't even know he's an Alabama alum, so I don't know how many more reasons Crimson Tide fans need to pick up this book, but please give us another one.
Well, hopefully it'll be a book that not only Alabama fans enjoy, but football fans in general. Mm-hmm. And the idea was really presented over a year and a half ago. It was February of 2016. Ray Gleer, the co-author, approached me and said, you know, Phil, with your background, having grown up within the state of Alabama as a child when Coach Paul Bear Bryant was dominating the scene and Alabama seemingly was at the top of the rankings every year, said, to your experience of being on the same coaching staff under Bill Belichick as a head coach in Cleveland with Nick Saban as the defensive coordinator, to your experience as the color analyst for Alabama the last 8 years, you could really tie a lot of things together and bring a unique 360-degree perspective to it. And so we began in earnest a year and a half ago. The book goes on sale on the shelves August the 29th. It's available for pre-order now on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and all the different retail outlets. But I'm proud of the book. I think it will give people insight into what it takes to win, because there's this misnomer out there that Alabama just recruits five stars, they roll them out there, and they win every year. Right. And that is so far from the truth in terms of the evaluation of those four and five stars, and sometimes three stars that then develop into top players, and then, of course, the preparation, the attention to detail over the course of a given week or a given portion of the season to get ready for game day.
Now, you and I were starting to talk before the show actually did, and a lot of the book was crafted actually here in Hoover. I mean, we're at Media Days now, and that was where a lot of this got done a year ago, as you were telling me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Once we got the book contract in place last summer, Ray and I met here during SEC Media Days a year ago. And I'd say we probably mapped out maybe 18 chapter ideas, and we did 12, 15 hours worth of interviews in terms of trying to, you know, put the personal touch, the personal background, and apply it to some of the things that have happened in Tuscaloosa over the last decade. So our due date was January the 12th, which was 3 days after the national championship
game. Yeah, they were a little busy that time of year.
This year, and so we worked on it throughout the fall, and you know, as fate would have it, Alabama was trying to do something that's such a rarity, go wire to wire. They come up 1 second short, in essence. And by noon the next day, we drove to Tampa. On the way back in the car, we're listening to the radio, and the Vegas odds makers and the different way too early top 25 polls are revealed. Right. And who's right at the top? Alabama. And I'm like, man, it truly is fourth and goal every day, because there's just this expectation that the Tide is going to win and continue to win. And hopefully the book gives some insight into the reasons why.
Well, the title alone is fantastic and not only applicable to Alabama fans, you're saying football fans, but I think I'm interested to know, if you're not necessarily a football fan, are there lessons that can be gleaned from this book in other walks of life?
I think there are. You know, all of us face different challenges in terms of a fourth and goal experience, whether it's a health issue or a job situation or what have you. You know, there's some personal stories in there about my own family background and some of the things that took place with the previous generations here within the state of Alabama. And so, you know, you think about fourth and goal, that's that moment where you're either going to score and do it, or you're going to get stopped and it's going to be a major disappointment. And there's a pressure that comes with that. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily an anxiety, but certainly an intensity that comes with that moment in any given football game. And I think that's why Alabama has been able to stay at or near the top of the rankings over the last decade, is because they approach every day like it's win or lose. Every single day in all aspects, whether it's strength and conditioning, nutrition, academics, discipline, whatever the case might be. And that goes beyond the X's and O's and the strategy that Nick Saban and his coaching staff have done such a phenomenal job at over the years.
Now, as you mentioned, you and Coach Saban were on the same staff with the Cleveland Browns, I believe, beginning in 1991. And now you're doing color analysis on the Tide radio broadcast up in the booth. I'm curious how often, when you're watching a game, calling a game alongside Eli Gold, where you see a personnel package or maybe a blitz scheme, and you think to yourself, you know what? We did that in Cleveland 25 years ago.
Well, you know, the game has really been modernized.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the great things that Nick Saban has done that has really set himself apart from most, is that adaptability, the ability to change over the course of years.
A lot of coaches can't do that.
You know, we've seen certain programs, we've seen certain teams, whether it's been pro or college, they put a system together, it wins, and then they go away.
Right.
Bama, if you look at the Tide in 2009 and the team this past year in 2016,
very
yes,
different.
A lot of the core philosophy is the same, but the style of play is extremely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I give 100% credit to Nick Saban for recognizing that he would have to adjust and needed to try and get ahead of the curve, and he's been able to do that. But, you know, those days in Berea, back with the Cleveland Browns from 91 to 95, and of course Coach Saban went to Michigan State in 95, but we had one winning season in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet on that staff there were five or six general managers that were produced off that staff. There were a half a dozen head coaches that were produced off that staff in college or pro. So it was a proverbial football think tank.
Right.
And I just felt like and believed that a lot of the roots of what we've seen happen in New England under Bill Belichick and what we've seen happen in Tuscaloosa with under Nick Saban, you know, a lot of that was sort of birthed or at least began to be planted at that point 25 years ago. And I think that's what will be one of the fascinating parts of the book for people.
I think there's a lot of people in Baton Rouge who wish that Les Miles had that adaptability factor that Coach Saban clearly has. I would like to know, again, you've known this man a long time before he's the behemoth that he is today, especially at this event. In what ways is Coach Saban exactly the same as he was back in the early 90s? And in what ways is he, you know what, he's a lot different than he once used to be.
Yeah, you walk out on the practice field now in Alabama, and Nick Saban's coaching the defensive backs
mm-hmm.
alongside Derek Ansley and Jeremy Pruitt, of course, handles the linebackers now. But regardless, a lot of the same drills that they're doing now were done the first time I walked on the practice field in 1991
mm-hmm.
with the Browns. And Rick Venturi is a longtime friend of mine, longtime assistant coach in the NFL. You know, he's quoted in the book as saying that Nick Saban is the greatest defensive back coach to ever walk the face of the planet. I mean, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And yes, that's true. And so I think where Coach Saban stayed the same, the intelligence level, he's always been able to talk about football, the schemes of football, the concepts of football, literally without even having to go to the board. And so that stayed the same. The attention to detail, being ready for all eventualities, having what I call the full toolbox to be able mm-hmm. to combat whatever the situation is happening during a game. And then, of course, the competitive nature of his personality. He's one of the most competitive people that I've ever known. And he's able to exude that to the rest of the staff and the people that are working with the team.
Okay, let's talk about the on-field product we can expect in 2017. It's amazing to me that a kid like Jalen Hurts, you know, got some criticism. I know he didn't throw the ball particularly well in the postseason. We all know what he can do with his legs, of course, but how quickly did football fans forget, even some Alabama fans forget, just how good this kid was for 2 or 3 months? He is the reigning offensive player of the year in the conference, by the way, and he just came out of high school. I mean, he got a fraction of the hype of a kid like Jacob Eason and was 10 times a better player right away.
Yeah, he did a remarkable job last year. True freshman, the composure, the poise that he showed in terms of managing the offensive side of the football. What really happened at least in my estimation, is that Bama was able to stay ahead of the sticks. They were very successful on first and second down throughout the better part of the season. So they'd end up at 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 2. And so they were very effective when they were able to win on first and second down. Unfortunately, in the championship game against Clemson, Clemson is a bit of a high-risk, high-reward kind of defense. They thrive on negative yardage plays. Mm-hmm. They were able to get some of those, get some stops on early down. So now Bama's looking at 3rd and 9, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 13. And because they had really never had to develop out the sophisticated passing game during the course of the season, because it wasn't needed to win the first 14 games, they end up going 2 for 15 on third down, could not maintain possession of the ball. It put a lot of pressure on the defense, and unfortunately, the last two drives, they just could not withstand the skill set of Deshaun Watson and the Clemson Tigers, who, you know, made some phenomenal catches themselves. But I really look for Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, who is new to the staff, comes from the New England Patriots. I really expect him to be the singular voice in Jalen Hurts' ear in the meeting room, classroom, walkthrough, practice field. And I think Jalen will take a big step this year in the short to intermediate passing game, because I hear people talk about, well, Bama doesn't throw the deep ball. Well, no, that's not true.
He threw a lot of deep balls
last
year.
Jalen Hurts throws an absolute beautiful deep ball. I saw him out at the Manning Academy, and he can set his feet and launch the football 45, 55 yards downfield. And that's what makes him tough to defend, because the defense has to defend the width of the field because of his legs.
Right.
But then they also have to defend the depth of the field with his arm talent. And I think that he'll ultimately really make a big step forward this year. And Bama should be even more efficient, especially in those third and long situations.
Now, I wrote something a couple of weeks ago about how if every team in the SEC could have one player back off of last year's team, whether they lost him to graduation, no more eligibility, or maybe left early for the NFL. And for Alabama, I was a little bit of a contrarian. I went with O.J. Howard. There might have been guys more talented, who, especially guys on defense like Reuben Foster, and you know, got the guys up front, of course, but we know Nick Saban can find wide receivers. We know he can find DBs. We know he can find front seven guys. There hasn't been a long list of game-changing two-way tight ends come out of that program. O.J. Howard is one of them. The way he blocked, the way he caught, those guys don't grow on trees. And I'm guessing that intermediate passing game that you would like to see from Jalen Hurts would be a lot easier if he still had O.J. Howard on campus.
Yeah, and of course, Miller Forstall and Hale Hinchis are returning players that have, you know, played a lot of football over the last season or so. But with O.J., I think you make a wise choice because O.J. is a prototype. I think Bama will have more confidence in terms of using the middle of the field in the passing game. Last year, I think there was some reluctance because you had a true freshman quarterback, so there were a lot more throws to the perimeter. But largely, the reason I think you make a good point is because Brian Daboll comes to the Patriots. Who did he coach up
there? Tight end coach, Robert Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski, correct. Martellus Bennett. So he understands the importance of a tight end. But I do think that Miller Forstall has great things ahead of him. Hale Hinchis certainly has been an end-of-the-line blocker. And I would expect Alabama to do some different things with their tight ends because of Brian's background at that position.
Now, of course, Alabama can reload on defense like no team in America. It seems like it doesn't matter who they lose to the NFL, they get another 4 or 5-star kid ready to go. But I look at what Jonathan Allen did in Tuscaloosa. I look at what Reuben Foster did. And I have to wonder, I know that Allen came after, say, an A'shaun Robinson, and Foster came after, you know, a Reggie Ragland. They're not the same guys, not necessarily playing the same positions, but it seems like on defense, guys like Allen and Foster appear to be borderline irreplaceable. Are they?
Well, it's interesting because Bama lost 10 players to the NFL draft that were ultimately selected. 7 of them were on defense, as we all know. If you take that volume of talent and remove it from most any school in the country, it would be like a crater. It would be noticeable to the naked eye when you went to practice or the following spring game after the season ended. With Alabama, is it noticeable? Sure it is. But the body types and the names are just unproven. But guys like Deshaun Hand gets a chance to start full-time. For the first time this year in 2017, De'Ron Payne returns. They've got Quinnen Williams Isaiah Buggs comes in from junior college. I mean, I think there's a lot of hope that those guys will step forward. And while the casual fan may discount those guys' abilities, the talent is there. It's just it's not experienced ability.
Right.
And so that'll be a bit of a work in progress. And I think it's one of the reasons we heard Coach Saban talk about it here at SEC Media Days that, you know, the offense is going to have to jump out of the gate being ready to go, because there probably will be a bit of a downside, at least initially, for this Alabama defense, because none of these guys have really played together. But you do have Rashawn Evans, who's an extremely talented player. He's an inside-outside combination linebacker. And I think the strength of Bama's defense likely will be in the secondary with Ronnie Harrison and Minkah Fitzpatrick and a very underrated Anthony Averett.
Now, there's one thing that talent doesn't seem to matter. I don't know if you could possibly replicate what this team did a year ago with the non-offensive touchdowns, the defensive scores, the special team scores. Sure, you might get one or two of those over the course of a season, but I believe five, six games in last year, Alabama had more non-offensive TDs than South Carolina had offensive TDs. I mean, that's video game stuff. How much of that can truly be a part of the scheme, and how much of that is, frankly, you know what, the ball went our way and we got the return we hoped for?
Well, it was definitely emphasized over the last several years. Not that it wasn't before, but the idea of stripping the ball, intercept it, and then go score with it.
Right.
And, you know, Bama, every defensive player had a score during their career, virtually, on that side of the ball. They still have playmakers when you consider Minkah Fitzpatrick and Ronnie Harrison in the back end. You know, Rashawn Evans has a chance to do the same thing. That was probably a rarity. But it still will be an important part of the Bama defense. And look, a lot of that was emphasized because they knew that, hey, there are question marks at quarterback, at center, at tailback. Remember a year ago, it would look like a vacant lot in terms of the depth chart. Mm-hmm. And now you've got Bradley Bozeman, who's an all-conference center who returns. You've got the offensive player of the year in Jalen Hurts and a stable full of running backs. I mean, they answered that running back question. They solved that riddle within 9 months.
So I've always known you as Senior Bowl Phil, because that's your Twitter handle, I believe, and that really is your baby. You're a Mobile native, and that week of events is in Mobile. And I've covered that event five or six times. And if there's a narrative about Alabama that seems to have gained some steam the last year or two, is that how much better can these guys get in the NFL? I'm sure this is a question you've answered before, but there's some people who think that these guys are so good in college and Coach Saban gets so much out of them that they've already hit their ceiling. How much better can they get? And maybe they shy away from them because they don't see the potential. Do you think that there's anything about that argument that makes sense?
Well, I think the NFL scouts, it's their job to try and figure out how much of a ceiling is left for a player. And there's no doubt that through the training, the nutrition, the development of the players at Alabama, that look, they're gonna be developed more there than most any place else in the country, because the goal and objective is to win games, develop players, get them ready for the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, the pro scouts have to take a look at that, just like they do with all the prospects that are out there. And we've seen some success, and you mentioned the Reese's Senior Bowl. We've seen some success with smaller school players who might have a large upside because they don't have the benefit of all of the resources. But I've always said this, you cannot grade programs, you can't grade schools or helmets or families. You have to grade each individual player as his own individual talent and then figure out how he fits in to your organization. And that's really that's probably one of the tricks of player personnel evaluation at the NFL level, is to try and identify and figure out, okay, how much room is there for a given player to grow. But I don't buy that narrative that's out there at all.
So I know we've talked about a lot of younger players at Alabama. We're expecting bigger things from this year, but give me a couple of below the radar guys. You're closer to this program than most people, guys who are not household names yet, maybe not even starters yet, that you're going to see them Mobile a couple years as Senior Bowl guys and going into the NFL. We just haven't heard about him yet.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, I tell you, you know, just from the A-Day game, I mean, the plays that Jerry Jeudy made.
Wow.
As a wide receiver.
He looks like Julio Jones
now,
part two.
A lot of these guys are coming into Tuscaloosa with the expectation that after 3 years or after 4 years in a red shirt, I'm going to punch my ticket and go to the NFL. So who knows with the true freshmen that are coming in. You know, I would say Josh Jacobs, you know, is a player that has the versatility of skill set as a receiver out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. That, you know, he may not end up being a first rounder, but he's going to be one of those players that ends up getting drafted and can fit into almost any scheme. And I think under Brian Daboll, you know, he'll be a featured part of Alabama's offense, especially as a receiver, would be, you know, my expectation.
All right, the book is Fourth and Goal, Every Day, Alabama's Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. It's going to be a fantastic read. I appreciate the advanced copy, by the way. Phil, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, I really appreciate the time, and thank you so much for having me. And yeah, August the 29th, it hits the shelf. So I think people really enjoy it, and it'll be a fascinating read for them. I'm very proud of it, and hope people will like it.
Best of luck with it.
Good deal.
Thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you liked what you heard, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also give us a rating. And for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.